On February 3, 2008, Rebecca Fenton called 911 after she found her husband's body lying on the floor of their Florida home.
911, what is your emergency?
My emergency is I think my husband's been shot. My house has been burglarized. I just walked in. I'm getting a pulse on him. I just came in from the gym.
Okay, what is the address there, ma'am?
It looks like a burglary. My God.
When the police arrived on scene, they found Larry Fenton's body lying just inside the doorway to his home. The cause of death appeared to be two gunshot wounds found on his back and neck. At first, Rebecca appeared devastated that her husband was dead. She continued to cry while talking with the police and while talking with her neighbors, but then something strange happened when the media arrived. Rebecca's tears suddenly vanished, and she was seen laughing as if nothing had ever happened. While the police continued investigating her husband's death, Rebecca was brought in for questioning.
I just want to get some just general information from you.
Do you
and
have
we'll
any
talk
answers?
About...
Have you found anything else?
Not yet, no. I haven't. I don't have any information. The other officers are out on the scene doing what they have to do. Okay.
The lady said that it was going to take some time.
Yes, it will. It usually, forensics comes out there. They do the processing. And
it really doesn't matter if he's gone.
So, but the more evidence, obviously, we can get, you know, processing the scene, the better it will be and the quicker it will be to capture who's done this.
Good.
Okay? Okay.
Do we have an idea? Anything? Neighbors? Anybody?
The other officers are out there talking to the neighbors. They're doing canvassing, but they haven't gotten back to me yet. So there's more going on at the scene.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Right. Well, once we're done talking, then I can report back to the scene, and then they can probably give me some more updated information.
But they took the lady, the man that they told me that he's definitely gone, that he can't be brought back to life or nothing.
I know.
What do you need to know?
Okay. As far as work goes, are you currently working?
I do a little bit of modeling for Bright House, but I wouldn't consider it work.
Okay.
I do a lot of charity work. I'm going to break my anonymity. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober 3 years.
Okay.
And I do a lot of work with PAR and rehab. So.
Okay.
I don't work. But
okay. Do you have an agent?
Do you have an angel?
No, an agent for your modeling career.
And a friend.
Okay. So it's like private. You're not with an agency. Okay.
When this incident happened, we have an in-law apartment in the back that we turned into a gym. I was in the gym, in our gym, when this happened.
Okay. Tell me about today, when you guys first got up. Anything unusual or strange happen in the morning? First of all, what time did you guys get up?
I had to get up a little bit earlier than usual because I was taking a girl that I have to tell you, I'm in the program. I hate to break my anonymity, but it has a lot to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls that I sponsor is in the PAR program. I had to pick her up to take her to a morning meeting that started at 9:45.
Okay.
And that meeting's probably 200 people fast there.
Okay.
Larry had told me before his trip that he didn't want to do anything. He was going to go to the gym, come home, do a little bit of work on his laptop, and then he was going to watch golf.
Mm-hmm.
Something about Tiger Woods playing in Dubai, and then, of course, try to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
The poor guy went to bed early, and he wanted to stay awake for the Super Bowl.
Right. Okay.
And that's where he was left when this happened.
Okay.
Where was Larry when I walked in the door? He was in the living room.
Okay.
And he was already watching TV.
Remember what he was watching?
Yeah. I joked with him.
Okay.
I said, you know, the only thing that woods are good for is hunting and hiking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke that we have about Tiger Woods.
Okay, so he was watching golf at that
point.
He
had his feet up on the coffee table. He does it every set.
Okay.
Said that he wanted to take a nap so that he could try to stay up for the Super Bowl. I did come in at one point, just kind of check on him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, how's it going? You know, joked with him.
Okay.
You know, who plays golf in Dubai? You know, where is that place?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, you know, yeah, but I bet you know all about Mary Kay. And we just joked.
Right.
And it was just a checking on him, mm-hmm. you know. I was sitting on the ball when I heard a noise.
Okay.
But it didn't sound like a pop. It sounded like somebody dropped something.
Okay.
And I also had music on real loud. So I continued to keep working out, and then all of a sudden I was like, and I wasn't concerned. I just was.
You heard something that sounded like you said it dropped.
Something dropped.
Now, did
like something
it
something fell off the roof?
Was it one noise? Was it several noises?
No, it was one. Okay. It was a. It sounded like something fell off the roof.
Okay.
And I kept on doing my sit-ups. And then I realized, I was like, yeah, let me go check on him. And, but it wasn't because of the noise. I just, periodically, we just check on each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then from the gym, what route did you take?
Walked into the back door.
Okay.
My husband was laying in the foyer.
Okay.
There was blood everywhere. He was laying.
Okay.
Is the back door open or shut?
Do you mean open, not locked?
Open, standing open?
No, it was shut, but it was not locked.
Is the front door locked?
The front door was not locked, unless he got it to lock it, which I doubt, because I walked out the front door to go out to my car and grab some... where and when, and some pamphlets on some sponsorship for AA earlier. And Larry wouldn't get up and lock the front door. He'll do all that at night.
Do you guys normally leave your doors open, unlocked?
Not the front door, no.
Okay.
The front door is set up so that when you, I feel like I can't think. I feel like my mind's not inside of my head.
That's okay.
I haven't wrapped.
Right.
Well, my mind around the fact that
it's a huge shock.
Rebecca claims that while she was exercising behind their home in a makeshift gym, she heard a loud bang. At first, she ignored the sound, which the detectives found very strange, but eventually she would go check on her husband, using the back door to their home. Larry's body was positioned in a way that it appeared he had been trying to run out the front door when he was shot from behind. Larry's watch and wallet were missing, and it appeared as if someone had run around the house, pulling out random drawers, trying to make it look like a burglary. The problem was that usually a thief will run away when they encounter a homeowner. Larry had been shot in the back, which means he had been running away from the thief, so there should have been no reason a thief would need to murder the homeowner.
As far as firearms in the house, firearms,
we did own a gun.
Okay.
We bought one very, very recently.
You just have one gun in the house?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a handgun? Is it a shotgun or rifle?
It's a handgun.
A handgun.
I don't know a lot about it, but we bought it recently, and it's registered, so I can't tell you the exact date.
Is it registered to you or your husband?
Don't quote me. I think Larry told me that it was legal for both of us to use, but only if we used it in the house.
Okay.
Like I couldn't put it in my car or tote it around in my purse.
Right.
And again, don't quote me. I think Larry told me that it was legal for him and for I, but that it had to be used inside of our house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kept in our bedroom.
Did you ever fire?
No.
You ever handle it?
No. Larry and I talked about going to the firing range, and I was kind of leery about it. We just never did it, and then we never saw the whack job again. So it was like, well, it's there if we need it, and then we don't have to worry about it from there.
Okay.
And we never saw the guy again, never had a problem.
Just real quick off of that, when I stepped out, I got a call from some people at the scene, and I guess there's a cell phone there. Whose cell phone would that be? Open cell phone on the ground, do you know?
It wouldn't be mine. Mine's on me.
Yours is on you? Does your husband have a cell phone?
Yes, he does. And when you open it up, there's a picture of me.
Okay.
So you picked up the gun before, but just by like the
he brought it home and he showed it to mm-hmm. me, and I was just kind of like, I was like, you know, I'm not. We haven't seen this guy in a while. I don't. And he was like, I'm gonna take you down the gun range. I'm gonna show you how to shoot it, so you're perfectly comfortable with it. We don't see the nut ball again, then fine. When I'm out of town, if you ever need it, he said, but I will tell you this: it's only legal to use in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go toting it around.
Right.
he joked with me. He said, you can't get PMS and think that you want it. And I was like, I understand.
Right.
And he was like, this is where it's going to be kept.
Where did you guys keep it in the house?
We kept it in our armoire, in our bedroom, in the third drawer on the left side.
Okay. Was it in a gun case?
It was in a, like a canvas.
Did it come with the gun? In other words, or was it just a canvas case that you guys...
No, I think that it came with the gun.
While the police were investigating the crime scene, they noticed that Larry's vehicle was not parked in the driveway. What's interesting is that the police would find the vehicle less than a block away, parked on the side of the road. Inside, they would find all the items, including cash, that had been stolen from Larry's home. Why would a thief kill a homeowner that wasn't a threat, steal any valuables they could find, take a vehicle that's in the driveway, only to leave everything inside less than two blocks away?
All right. How many cars do you have?
We have two vehicles. It took me probably 15, 20 minutes after everybody arrived. I was talking to a police officer, and it dawned on me that my husband's vehicle was missing. And I turned to him and go, where the hell is my husband's Jeep?
Where's the keys? The keys for the Jeep?
There's a old antique desk in our dining room.
Is that on the first floor or the second floor?
On the first floor.
It's in an antique desk in the dining room.
Yeah, he keeps that. He keeps his wallet.
He keeps all that in there?
Mm-hmm, when he comes in.
Okay, so he wouldn't sit around the house with his keys in his pocket?
No. No, I can tell you exactly. We both keep our keys.
How many people know where you keep your keys?
Me and my husband.
Nobody else?
No. Nobody's been in our house, even good friends. It's kind of been a choice of ours, but also we just...
Does he leave any keys in the car?
Never.
Is there a spare key in the car, a hide-a-key or something?
I don't know if my husband has a hide-a-key or a spare key to his Jeep. I know that there's two sets of keys to my car.
And where are your sets?
I have a set on me. I have a set on me.
Okay.
And I have an extra set that's also in that antique desk. Larry had, I have two sets when we purchased the car. The 2005.
Did you have those keys on you today, or did you take them when you left?
I took them when I came in. I grabbed my keys. After I realized what had happened, I grabbed my keys off of, they were on the kitchen counter, and I grabbed them off the kitchen counter. When I realized that my house had been ransacked, I ran upstairs. When I saw how bad it was, my first thought was, I better get out of here.
Where was your house ransacked at?
Where?
The whole house or any particular?
The living room. I noticed that the living room was, my bedroom was, our bedroom was, but especially my husband's office. And I went to reach on the floor for the phone, because that's where all of our numbers are, and I was like, let me get out of here. So I went out.
What floor did you go to?
The second floor.
Okay, so you came in, you saw
my
him.
My husband. I fell for a pulse.
And then you went upstairs?
Yes, I did.
What'd you go upstairs for?
Because when I turned the corner and saw the living room had been ransacked, I went upstairs to see what the hell had happened.
Okay.
And I yelled. I said, I'm loaded. I have the police following me. So if you're in my house, you better come out now.
Okay. Then when did you call 911?
I thought the house had been ransacked. I ran back down. I checked my husband again for a pulse.
Did he have a pulse the first time?
I couldn't tell.
What about the second time?
I didn't feel one, but I didn't know if I was feeling in the right place.
Okay, now.
I got out of the house. I went to my car, which was in the driveway. I opened up the door, and I called you guys.
They find it very strange that after Rebecca finds her husband's body and she checks his pulse, she runs around the house unarmed to see what happened. After looking through every room in the house, she then checks her husband's pulse a second time, then goes outside to call the police. Rebecca says that the first pulse check did not confirm Larry was dead, so why didn't she immediately dial 911 and ask for an ambulance? Also, why did she stay in a house that potentially had a murderer inside?
Okay.
And then I got out of my car and I was hysterical, and I just started pacing the driveway. I was like, somebody's got to get here now. If he's still alive, maybe you can help him. Trying to remember what else I said.
What did they tell you on the phone?
Try to calm down. What is your name? Mm-hmm. Help is on the way. Was he shot or was he stabbed? I told him that I didn't know. I couldn't tell. I just kept saying.
When you checked him, you just checked his pulse?
His eyes were open. I checked here.
Was he face up or face down?
He was face down.
Face down?
Blood all around him.
Well, how was his head? Was his head down or to the side?
His head was to the side and his eyes were open, and that's what made me think that maybe he was alive, and if I could get an ambulance out there fast enough, maybe we could save his life.
Okay. So you checked his pulse?
I checked his neck. When I came back down the stairs, I checked his arm. And then I thought it was a good idea if I got out of the house to just call the police.
Okay. You didn't try CPR, didn't try to revive him?
No, I didn't. I didn't think it was a good idea to touch anything.
What did you think happened?
I wanted to know if my husband was still alive.
Okay. Let me just make sure I understand you right. You came in the back door, your husband's laying there.
Yes.
You went to him first.
Yes.
Okay.
Screamed.
Okay.
Throughout this interrogation, Rebecca constantly reminds the detectives that she was screaming and crying when nobody was around. She says this to make sure they all know that she is the victim.
Where's the nearest phone to your husband at that time?
The nearest phone to my husband would have been in the living room, but our living room phone, the buttons haven't been working recently.
Okay.
So my cell phone is sitting in my car. I would have had to have gone upstairs and either used his business line or used the landline that's upstairs. When I went upstairs, it wasn't to use the phone. It was to see what the hell had happened and if anybody else was still in my house. When I saw my husband's office and I saw my room had been ransacked, I ran back down the stairs. I checked Larry again.
Okay. Was anything ransacked on the first floor?
Yes, the living room. The living room was ransacked. The drawers had been pulled out. All of my self-help books had been pulled out. This just happened. I'm having a hard time remembering, but I'll do the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a good idea to move them.
Okay.
I just remember telling the lady, hurry if we get an ambulance to him, maybe he's not dead.
Why didn't you think it was a good idea to move him?
I couldn't fathom the fact of what had happened. I couldn't.
What did you think happened?
There's something very wrong. He couldn't be dead. And if I could get an ambulance there fast enough, maybe they could help. I didn't think it was a good idea to touch him. I can remember being leery just to get a pulse. I guess I just watched too much TV, and it's like, don't touch, don't disturb.
What kind of TV would tell you that?
Just, I don't know, CSI, I guess, don't touch anything, stay, the minute you find out something's wrong, get outside, call the police. I just wanted to get an ambulance there because I wasn't sure whether he had a pulse or not. I didn't know if I was checking even right. And if I got an ambulance there fast enough, maybe they could get it back.
Rebecca keeps saying that her main goal was to get an ambulance to her location as quickly as possible. If that's the case, then why take her time walking through both floors of her home, walk past two landline phones, and then go outside to make the 911 call?
And he had no enemies, correct?
No.
You don't have any enemies?
No.
Is there anything of value in the house?
Jewelry. We don't have any money in the house.
But nobody's been in the house to know that's there, correct?
No.
Okay. Any marital problems?
None at all.
He has a couple of ex-wives, is that correct?
Yes, he does, and we've never had any problems from either one of them. One of them lives right down the road. We're not friends with them, but they don't give us any problems, and I've never physically seen either one of them.
Rebecca's neighbors would tell the police that over the past year, Rebecca had lost quite a bit of weight. The detective is curious why her appearance had drastically changed, so he confronts her with this information.
And the reason I ask is, from canvassing the neighborhood, some people say that your appearance has changed slightly in the past year. You're a lot thinner in the face. And
well, I quit drinking 3 years ago, so maybe it's from the bloating. But I've always weighed 122 pounds, and I fluctuate between 120.
But you were bloated before, is that?
Bloated in the face from drinking alcohol, yes.
Okay. No drug use?
Marijuana.
How often do you use marijuana?
I used marijuana.
Okay.
My sobriety date is 2/17 of 2005. I am clean and sober.
You're an alcoholic?
Mm-hmm.
And you use marijuana?
And I use marijuana. Drugs are not a part of my story besides that at all.
Okay.
My husband did not drink. That's not true. Once in a while, he'd be out on a trip or something and he would have a beer. But my husband couldn't tolerate. He couldn't. He couldn't drink. He couldn't tolerate it.
The detective asks Rebecca to go through her day again so they can compare her story with the first time she told it. They ask Rebecca about any phone call she made, and that's when she tells them she made a phone call using her cell phone while she was working out in her gym. The inconsistency here is that previously, Rebecca claimed she had to go to her car to get her cell phone so she could call 911, but now she is saying that she had her cell phone on her while she was working out. Unfortunately, the detectives don't pick up on this piece of information.
Did you get any phone calls during that time period you were home or make any phone calls?
Did I make any phone calls? No, I did get a phone call from a girl that I sponsor, and I told, as a matter of fact, I was in the gym when I got the call.
Is there a phone in the gym or she called your cell phone?
She called my cell phone.
Okay.
And I said to Gail, I said, is this important? Do you think you're going to drink? Are you having any problems? What are your thoughts and feelings? She goes, no, I'm just checking in with you.
Okay.
And I said, listen, I'm working out right now.
That's the same girl you were with earlier?
No, this is a different one.
So it was just a quick conversation while you were in the gym?
Yeah, it was like, you know, you're going to drink? If you're not going to drink, and, you know, you're not flipping off the walls and flipping in or whatever, and everything's okay, I do care, but let me finish my workout and I'll give you a call.
Right, okay. Were there any other phone calls today that came or went from
after
you?
I came home? Not on my cell phone.
The other issue they have is the crime scene itself. The intruder would have entered through the front door, which means Larry would have seen and heard the intruder from the living room couch. How did the intruder get behind Larry to shoot him if the intruder would have been between Larry and the front door? Also, why would the intruder stay around to ransack the house, which would have taken at least 5 minutes? And why did the intruder decide to steal from this house in the middle of the day with two parked cars in the driveway?
So if somebody came in, he would have been downstairs.
He was downstairs, and if somebody would have walked in, they wouldn't have immediately saw him.
Uh-huh.
They would have had to gone in a little bit and seen him at the end of the couch. They wouldn't have walked in the front door.
Could somebody have walked in and walked upstairs without seeing him?
Could somebody have walked in and walked upstairs and not seen him? Absolutely.
You think so?
Yeah, because our staircase is right there. They could have walked right into the front door, he would have heard them.
He would have heard them.
Oh, absolutely.
Upstairs. So the person that ransacked the place probably killed him first, you think?
You put my husband in bed. I'm sorry. No way that you could have torn that house into the reins without Larry knowing it. And the way that he was laying must have heard somebody come in the door, because it looks where he was laying like, not maybe there's a confrontation, but he came into the foyer. There's no reason for him to come in the foyer unless he was crossing over the kitchen to get somebody.
I'm just... trying to understand is what type of person would shoot somebody, make that noise, and then take time to ransack a house?
I don't know. I can't answer that. I have no idea what happened. And I didn't hear.
And you didn't hear the car leave?
No.
How? Where was his car at in reference to where you were?
My car's parked here. He's parked here.
In the dirt?
Yeah, he parked. Yeah, he gets to park in the dirt. I get the driveway. Sometimes he'll bring it around.
They really tore the house up.
What'd you say?
They really tore your house up.
I didn't look that well.
Knocked things over, knocked over big items, tipped things over.
Yeah, it looked like the living room, the stereo system had been knocked over. I can remember that. Drawers pulled out.
But nothing was taken. The stereo was still there. The TV was still there.
From my antique store. We've got three pieces that could be somebody's retirement, for God's sakes.
And that was still there?
There were paintings in there that are worth $17,000 to $25,000. Yeah, this person didn't know they were antiques. They didn't know the paintings.
What were they looking for then?
You're asking me questions I can't answer. I don't know. We don't have money in our house. My expenses.
Do you have any savings in the
house? No. No, we don't. And my expensive jewelry is kept in a sewing box that it's an old-fashioned antique sewing box, and unless you know that the middle opens, sort of like a Chinese puzzle box.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in that house?
Let me think for a second. I think 4 years, but I can't think straight. And
Did he or you ever sell drugs out of that house?
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
So somebody wouldn't be looking for illegal drugs?
No. I am clean and sober.
Just trying to figure out why somebody would spend that much time in your house.
I don't know. I'm not sure what happened.
Do you have any questions of me?
I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around the fact that he's gone, and I just want to know. I'm gonna say, tell me who did this, but you know, at this point, I'm just feeling like it really doesn't matter who did it because he's gone. So I want to know when I'm going to be allowed to go back into my home and see if anything's missing. Do you have any answers? Anything? Has anything come through?
Not
the
yet.
Neighbors?
Takes a long time to get in the house and process. It could take all night.
That's what the woman said.
They're very meticulous.
Good. It's good.
And if the suspect was all over the house, you know they're gonna have to process.
Left something behind, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was one person? Are we looking at more than one person?
I don't know, because I haven't been into the scene. I don't know. I haven't been into your home.
The detectives have their suspicions, but they don't have any evidence to arrest Rebecca. At least, not yet. Before they let her go, they ask her if they can run some tests. More specifically, gunpowder residue tests on her hands.
All right. The only other thing that we're going to do is just do forensics, do some processing. They're just going to take photographs of you, okay? They're just going to test your hands and collect some clothing, okay? We have clothes here. We'll give you T-shirt and shorts, okay? And then that's it, okay?
We're just going to put you in your room, but we're going to ask that you don't wash your hands, okay?
Right, I understand.
Because you understand we have to rule you out because you were there, right?
The woman explained to me,
okay,
because I signed something and it said something about accused, and then it was she had to come in the bathroom with me, so I didn't wash my hands. So all of a sudden I said, am I a suspect? And she very calmly explained that this mm-hmm. is a procedure and this is how it goes and this is why it goes like this. And
see, we want to do this because we don't want somebody to say 3 months from now after we did nothing with you that you did it. You see what we're saying?
I don't understand what you're saying. No.
That's the purpose of us doing this, to eliminate you since you're at the house.
Okay.
So if somewhere down the line somebody says 3 months, somebody down the line accuses you for whatever reason, we can say, well, we did this, this, and this. And
great.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You haven't shot a gun recently, have you?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
All right.
The test they did would come back negative for gunpowder. While the tests were being done, the detectives had a chance to talk with each other. They still couldn't understand why Rebecca did what she did after finding her husband's body.
Just try to get your line of thinking here. We were thinking about this, and both of us are married, and we thought, well, if this happened to us, we don't think we would have left our spouse's side during that time. I mean, especially if we thought there was some hope that they were alive.
I got scared. I thought the best thing for me to do was to get out of the house.
What were you scared of at that time?
What had happened? Call the police. Get people there as soon as possible.
Speckland, what I don't understand, though, is why you take the time to go upstairs. The danger upstairs, the unknown upstairs. Why would you put yourself in that situation?
I wondered if somebody was still at my house.
What were you going to do if you ran across somebody?
I don't know. Probably get killed.
So what about, wouldn't your main concern be what if he's still alive, maybe I can help him?
Of course I wanted to help him.
But you left.
I walked outside and called the police. I left the scene. I walked outside and called the police.
And left your husband.
And asked him to get an ambulance there as quick as possible. Because I wasn't for sure that he was dead. I didn't know if he'd been shot or if he'd been stabbed. And could they get an ambulance there as quick as possible?
But you didn't attempt any CPR, didn't stay with him. I mean, why did you leave?
I thought it was a smart thing to do. Get out of the house, not get out of the house and call the police. That's what I was thinking. And horrified by what I had seen and what had happened. I wasn't sure what had happened, and it had to have happened, and I was so close by.
Rebecca makes a mistake, and she tells the detectives that she saw two wounds on her husband's back. Paramedics didn't know how many wounds or their location until they removed Larry's shirt. So how did Rebecca know?
How would you know that there were two wounds, though, when all that's starting to coagulate and run together? They had to actually physically remove clothes to see how many wounds there were.
He was laying on the floor with his face like this. His eyes were open.
Right.
I saw a wound here, and I saw a wound what looked like in the middle of his back.
And what did these wounds look like?
He had either been shot or he had been stabbed.
Why do you say that? What did the wounds look like?
They didn't look like wounds. It was just, they looked like blood. I didn't see wounds. I saw blood on his clothes.
What color was his sweater?
It was a white, grayish sweatshirt. He was wearing.
Dark or light?
It was light.
And then, all right, so then you check the house and there's nobody there, obviously, right?
Right.
So why'd you leave your husband there?
Call the police. Should I have stayed with him and
there was no lab? There was no phone in the house? There was a phone in the house.
I was just trying
to understand why you did what you did.
Okay.
Did he say anything? Could you see his chest rising and falling? Could you tell if he was breathing?
No, but I thought that he might be alive because his eyes were open. And I just bent down. I was like, Larry.
Did he make any sounds?
No.
At any point?
No. And I got up and I went outside and I called the police. If I had known that I was supposed to be with him, hold him or do CPR than I would have. I think that I'm trying to think of what I was thinking.
What did the 911 operator ask you if he's breathing? What did the 911 operator, what did you tell them?
I said, I believe my house has just been burglarized and it looks like my husband could possibly be deceased, but I can't tell. She said, where are you calling from? I gave her my last name and my address. I was hysterical. So you'll have to listen to the tape to know what I said exactly. I didn't think it was wise for me to touch him, to get blood on me, to turn him over, to do anything like that. I thought that would just either make things worse for the scene. I didn't know if anybody was still in my house the first time when I found him. I guess if you guys would have shown up and I would have had blood all over me, I guess it might have incriminated me. I did think that he might still be alive because his eyes were open.
Even though the detectives believe that something wasn't right with her story, they would be forced to end the interview and let her go. Before she leaves, Rebecca wants to know why the crime scene doesn't make any sense.
Okay, I'm just a little concerned about the last questions that have been asked because they don't make sense to me.
What do you mean the last questions have been asked?
When how could somebody have known that those keys went to that Jeep?
You asked that. I didn't ask.
I know. I've got some questions. Like, there's a few things here that don't make sense. Why would they take keys? How could they have known that it belonged to a Jeep? You're telling me a neighbor tells me the Jeep wasn't there.
And didn't you say you took your keys off the counter?
I took the keys off the breakfast counter.
Why wouldn't they have taken them there?
Out in the open. And take the Hyundai. The Hyundai is... Hyundai's clearer, a better car. It's closer. It's right there. So I guess I'm just a little concerned that there's some questions here that aren't making sense to me.
They're not making sense to us either.
Okay.
You're hoping maybe you could shed some light on it.
I don't know how I could.
Rebecca was released and she was told she was not allowed to go home for several days. This made Rebecca very angry, and she demanded to be allowed to go home, even for just a few minutes. The police held firm, and she was forced to stay with a close friend. The following day, the investigators decided to search her car that was sitting in the driveway. Under the driver's seat, they found a man's watch and the murder weapon. The gun was registered to Larry, and it was the same one Rebecca was talking about during her interview. Testing confirmed that it was indeed the weapon that was used to kill Larry, but there were no fingerprints found anywhere on the gun. The detectives decided not to confront Rebecca, at least until they had more evidence tying her to the murder. This decision would lead to the case remaining unsolved for over 5 years. During this time, Rebecca tried to get her husband's very large life insurance policy, but because there were so many unanswered questions, the insurance company refused to pay it out. Rebecca would begin to struggle with her bills, and then one day she received a notice from the bank telling her they would be foreclosing on her home. Strangely enough, not long after receiving this letter, Rebecca's home would go up in flames. Because the fire department could not figure out how the fire began, Rebecca received a very nice insurance payout. Not long after the fire broke out, the police would arrest a petty thief named Alfred Noland. Alfred realized he was about to break his parole, so he told the police a story about a woman named Rebecca Fenton. Alfred claimed that he had lived and dated Rebecca for a short time, and he remembers that she was struggling to pay her bills. Alfred claims that while he was living with her, a fight broke out between them about money. During the fight, Rebecca grabbed a kitchen knife and threatened Alfred with it. She told him she would kill him, just like she did Larry, if he didn't get her more money. With Alfred's testimony, the police had enough to bring Rebecca in for another interrogation. This one would only last a few minutes. As soon as Rebecca realized what was happening, she demanded a lawyer. Unfortunately for her, they already had an arrest warrant signed by a judge, so Rebecca was officially charged with murder. Prosecution believed that after her workout, she came inside where Larry was watching TV from the couch. She then went upstairs, grabbed the gun, and went back downstairs to confront Larry. As soon as Larry had seen the gun, he got up and ran to the front door. Rebecca then fired the weapon at her fleeing husband. From there, Rebecca believed that all she had to do was stage a burglary and put a few items into Larry's vehicle, but then she ran out of time and had to abandon the vehicle a few blocks away. She then runs back home and washes the gun residue off her hands. Realizing she was out of time, she hides the gun under her seat, thinking that later she can dispose of the gun properly. The evidence that they had, paired with Alfred's testimony, was enough to convince the jury she was guilty. Rebecca received life in prison without the possibility of parole for first-degree murder. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Was Rebecca set up, or is she just a cold-blooded killer?